Ken, you know, you can get it started and stuff.
Yep.
Okay, Glenn Williams, City Talks. 5-4-3.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of City Talk here on WBCA in Boston. I am very honored to have a gentleman sitting here whose face, and I'm sure voice, is familiar to all of you every night on WBZ-TV, and I just love saying those call letters. And he is not only that, not only because I worked there for 14 years, but it's the only three-station call letter in Boston, and his name is Steve Burton. And Steve, first of all, I can't tell you what an honor it is to have you sitting here.
Well, it's a pleasure for me to be here, and I want to thank you for taking the time for having me on, my friend.
You grew up in Framingham.
I did.
Tell me what it's like to grow up with a celebrity who just happened to play for the New England Patriots.
Well, you know, it was a little different, but my dad was Ron Burton.
Right.
And he was the type of guy that he was not big on his status. You understand what I'm saying? He was just my dad to me.
Yep.
And so he loved kids, loved raising kids, and was an example to our neighborhood, to the community. And it was a lot of fun growing up with my dad because he taught us, and he was very strict. Both my mom and dad were very strict, they set examples for us, and we had to live by them.
Such as?
Well, boy.
This is intriguing.
I'll give you one example. I'll give you a perfect example. I was went to Framingham North High School. Back then, there a couple of different high schools in Framingham, and I was not the captain of the football team, but I was the quarterback of the football team. Mm-hmm. And we had just beaten Framingham South, which is a huge rival. And the captain of the football team had a party at his house, and everybody was invited to the party, the parents, the players, and the cheerleaders. And at this house, the rule was the parents had to stay upstairs while the kids stayed downstairs. And while the parents were upstairs socializing, the kids were downstairs drinking. And I never drank, never tasted alcohol, don't know what it's like. But I was in an atmosphere around everybody who was. And my mom walked downstairs, and I had just gotten to the party, and I had a good day. Mm-hmm. Just gotten to the party, and all these people were around me telling me what kind of day I had. And my mom walks downstairs. She walks back upstairs. My dad comes down, and he points to me. He goes, "Grab your hat and your coat. We got to go." I said, "But, Dad, I just got here." He said, "Grab your hat and your coat. We got to go." And the room got deathly quiet. And I remember walking through the crowd, and all these people were standing around me, and I remember walking through the crowd, and I walked back upstairs, and I got my hat and my coat, and I got back in the car, and I started to cry. And I said, "Why do I have to go? Everybody else got to stay. Everybody else was drinking. Dad, I wasn't drinking. Everybody else." And by the time I got the third everybody else out, my parents turned around and looked at me and said, "Everybody else ain't my son." And my parents and my dad taught me a great lesson that day. He taught me how to draw a crowd, but he also taught me how to withdraw from the crowd when the crowd's not doing me any good. And that's how strict they were. And so I wasn't allowed to do, me and my brothers and my sister weren't allowed to do a lot of the things the other kids we're allowed to do.
All right. But your dad was the kind of guy that in the spotlight, everybody would know when the Patriots or Ron Burton had a bad day. What kind of effect did that have on you, like in school? For instance?
Well, you know, so when my dad started playing, I was very, very young. So I don't remember all that much about his playing days, except for I do remember he didn't take the game home with him. You know, he was... He was always upbeat, and life was bigger than football for him. He loved the Patriots and wanted to stay, loved Boston, thought the fans were great to him here, and he wanted to remain here. My dad had a chance to go to other cities and play. He said, "No, you know what? I love the city here. Let's raise a family here." And that's what we decided to do.
Now, give me a timeline. What years did he play?
He played from 1960 to 1966.
So he was there in the very beginning of the AFL.
They started the team with him.
Wow. And guys like Gino Cappelletti.
Absolutely. Babe Parilli.
Babe Parilli, yeah.
Tommy Usick, all those guys came back. But my dad's dream was, if he ever made it, he wanted to give it all back, which is why he started the Ron Burton Training Village.
Which you
to
are,
give back to kids.
Which you are affiliated with.
Yes, sir.
All right. Getting into something a little more sobering, I heard an interview with a gentleman who was the curator of a museum in New York City.
Uh-huh.
He was an African American. And he said, in order to succeed in this world, you have to be twice as good to go half as far. Do you agree with a statement like that?
Wow. As are you saying as an African American?
Yep.
Or just in general?
Both.
I think that's a great question. I think you have to. My dad put it this way. When you got on that football field, there can't be any ifs, ands, or buts who the best player on the field is. That's what he said. You mm-hmm. can't leave it up for option. You can't leave it up for choice. You have to go and establish yourself right away. And so don't leave it in the coach's hands to say which one is the better player. You already know. You already know who the better player is. So you got to make sure that every opportunity you get, you want to take advantage of. And be good to people along the way.
Boy, you know, when you talk about those early years, I can remember when the AFL first started.
Right.
And I remember the only other team I remember players from were the Buffalo Bills, because I'm from Rochester, New York.
Oh, there you go.
And I remember names like Cookie Gilchrist
mm-hmm.
and Daryl LaMonica and Jack Kemp.
Those were some big-time names. Big-time names. And they used to have knockdown, drag-out fights with Buffalo. I mean, there were some
yeah,
rugged
were games
with Buffalo, right?
Yeah, great games, great games. And Foss was the commissioner, I remember, and they first got started on ABC TV.
You remember those days, huh?
I remember those days very well. Yes, I remember them very well. Now, what made you decide that you wanted to get into broadcasting?
I'll give you the short version.
I can take the long one, too.
I went to Northwestern University
right.
as a communications major. Mm-hmm. And I had time left over on my football scholarship to go to grad school. And I applied at Northwestern to the Kellogg School of Business. And I made the dean's list at Northwestern. The only reason I'm telling you why I made that I made the dean's list, because I had the dean write me a recommendation to Kellogg, and I did not get in.
Ah.
And because I was a terrible test taker. Wasn't a bad writer, but terrible test taker. And I had to take a test to get into Kellogg. Well, the journalism school, all you had to do was write.
Right.
So what happened to me was I did not get into Kellogg, but I got into Medill School of Journalism. And that's the only reason why I went that way is because I had time left over on my football scholarship to stay in school and get my master's. And I got my master's in broadcast journalism. So what happened to me was God closed the door but opened a window. And I was able to go that route. And I was very thankful that I was able to go that route.
See, I always was interested in broadcasting. My parents gave me a tape recorder when I was 10 years old.
Is that right?
And I've been fascinated with a microphone ever since.
Love it.
Love it.
Exactly. And it's a great city to cover things in, isn't it?
Oh, Boston, hey.
Nothing I mean, like Boston.
Absolutely. If you want to be anywhere, man, this is
the place.
When I came here, and I came to Boston in 1967, my first year here, and, of course, that was the year of the impossible dream.
Right.
So it was a great time. You never realize it until later on what a great time it is, but Boston is still, I think, a great city to
no question about
sports.
It.
And your first job was at NESN.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about that.
Well, NESN was great for me because I grew up playing football and basketball. NESN covered baseball and hockey. So it really made me more well-rounded, when I got out of NESN to go to WBZ. And NESN was great. Covering the Red Sox, covering the Bruins at that time. They had some good teams. They had some fun teams. They had some great guys to cover. You know, on the Bruins, there was Neely and Bork and Reggie Lemelin and Andy Moog and those
yep.
guys. And then back in the Red Sox days, they had Mo Vaughn. Remember the hit dog?
Yeah, yep.
You know, and Roger Clemens. And it was just so much fun covering these guys. And then, to make the transition when Big Poppy came and they're able to take everything to a completely different level. And it's just been an unbelievable run. But I love Nesson. I was there for about 3.5 years to 4 years, and then was able to make the transition over to WBC Channel 4.
You mentioned Cam Neely. I'll tell you a quick side note.
Yep.
I'm sure you remember Bob Wilson.
Yes,
very
of course.
Well, the radio voice. Radio of the voice. Boston Bruins.
Had a great voice.
Great,
many years. Yeah.
A fabulous voice. A wonderful. He was a friend of mine for, oh gosh, from like 1972 until he passed away.
Just a great guy.
Fabulous person. And when he retired, I called him and congratulated him on his retirement. And he said, you know what? There's only two other people that called me besides you. Bobby Orr and Cam Neely.
Is that right?
So I would say I was in pretty good
yes,
company.
Yes, you are in great company. and both those guys, Bobby Orr and Cam, I mean, you know, Orr is just.
Oh, absolutely. I've met him a couple of times.
He's so humble. To be that great and so humble, and what he's done for people all around the world, not just here in New England, but all around the world, he just takes the time to talk to you.
I can remember saying to Bob LaBelle when we were doing Calling All Sports on WBZ Radio, you had Bob Wilson with the Bruins, Santos, the Patriots, Johnny Most with the Celtics, Ned Martin, Boston Red Sox. You had guys that were in the top of their
game.
Profession.
No question.
Every one of them.
No question. And you mentioned Bob LaBelle. Bob LaBelle is so special to me. He was the reason why I went to Channel 4. I mean, he was my mentor. He was so much fun to be around, engaging, just so talented, witty. You know,
oh, yeah.
And
very funny,
he had a
yeah.
following that I just love the man.
You know what? We talked a few minutes ago about Don Cherry. I can remember interviewing Bob about him and saying, you know what? I think we should have used Cherry more. And he agreed.
I agree with that, too.
He said we didn't use him enough.
He was very colorful, Don Cherry.
Yep. I mean, he didn't bring a Stanley Cup to Boston.
Right.
But he brought color and excitement and and of course,
and clothes.
Yeah, yeah, and Bruce Cassidy, who obviously did a good job last year.
Yes,
but it ain't the same as having Don Cherry.
No, no,
it's just not the same. He was somebody very, very special. Did LaBelle get you to BZ?
Yeah, so LaBelle did. LaBelle, as a matter of fact, I was going to a different station, and LaBelle goes, "Oh, you got to come with me if you want to come to the number one sports." Sports station, you got to come with me. And I'm glad I did. It was a lot of fun working with him, worked with Bob for so many years. And he took me under his wing. And I just love the guy because he was so much fun to work with. You know, he could ad lib on the fly. He was witty. He was so creative. And we just loved doing things together.
Do you ever wish that you could have done, I mean, maybe you have, I don't know. If you didn't, if you did, it's not on Wikipedia, but have you ever wanted to do play-by-play?
You know, not really.
Really?
No, not really. I love doing what I do now. I did a little bit covering way back in the day, covering the Northeastern football a little bit, and that was fun. But I like covering the different sports teams that we cover, and there's nothing like covering the teams here in Boston.
All right. My wife has given me a trivia question to ask you.
Okay.
Apparently, you played some football.
Yes, sir.
And you played in Gillette Stadium before it became Gillette Stadium. What was the name of the ballpark?
Oh, wow. Before it was Gillette. Gillette Stadium has had
or
many.
Or Foxborough, yeah.
Yeah, Foxborough Stadium has had, Gillette Stadium has had many names over the years. But the name that when I actually played, and it was, I want to go CMGI.
Okay.
CMGI Stadium. It was that stadium that they gave the name to. Do you remember that? They gave
vaguely, very vaguely.
But because it was short-lived. I mean, it didn't even last.
Yeah, that I remember. I just couldn't remember who it was.
It was CMGI. Now, they had Foxborough Stadium. They had Schaefer Stadium. They had Sullivan Stadium.
Right.
But when I, you know. Is that the answer? Do you know?
I don't know. I asked you because I figured you would know.
I think it was CMGI just for like, it may have been like a month or something.
I had a chance to sit down with Upton Bell.
Great guy.
And it's amazing the stories that he has about when the Patriots first got started.
Yes.
And when he came to Foxborough, which was in 70, 71, 72, the actual parts of the offices were in the men's room.
He has some tremendous stories. And I love listening to Upton because he can go back in time and tell you he's got his memory is fantastic.
Yeah.
And he remembers where he was on a certain day. And it's fun listening to Upton Bill.
You should read his book.
I know.
If you haven't.
It's phenomenal.
I've read it, and it's a great book. It's a fabulous book. You have two brothers that are also in broadcasting, one of whom works at WBZ-TV.
Well, I'm glad you said it to my brother, because everywhere I go, people go, "What's it like working with your son?" And I go, "It's my brother, Paul Burton. That is not my son. It is my brother." And so, yes, he does news. I do sports. I have another brother, Philip Burton, who used to work for ABC in Orlando.
Oh.
Now he does a lot of community work and works with the Ron Burton Training Village, but still lives in Orlando. And I have a brother, Ron Jr., who works for the Red Sox.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, and I have a sister that lives in Dallas.
Ah. And she works for the Cowboys.
No, she's a teacher.
All right. With 12-year contracts,
yep,
which Mookie Betts is probably going to get, unfortunately, Bryce Harper, who has a 13-year contract. I mean, some of these contracts last longer than players' careers.
Careers. It's crazy, right?
Are ballplayers getting too greedy?
Great question. Great question. Now, it's easy for us to say that they are, but if you're a ball player and the opportunity comes your way, you're going to want that. You know, you want the guaranteed money. You want, but that's how teams get in trouble as well. I mean, that's how the Red Sox had to, you know, let go of some of these guys because the money outlasts the player,
yeah.
You know, and they can't perform. You know, you can't blame the ball players for going after what they go after. Because the game, you know, you'll never make this money again once you get it. And so I don't blame them for going after it, but I think the contracts are just getting way out of hand. I mean, it's crazy. It's just crazy now.
I mean, I grew up when if you signed a 2-year contract, you got a big deal.
Yes.
You got a big deal. I can remember when Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale held out for that kind of deal.
Can you imagine if those guys were playing now?
Oh, yeah. I often think about that. I often think about a Mickey Mantle or a Willie Mays.
Oh.
If they were playing
what
today,
they'd be worth?
What they would be worth, exactly. All right. Because of what you do, and
yes,
because
sir.
Of the structure, you really don't get too much of a chance to comment on the clubs in Boston. And I'm going to give you that chance.
Okay.
Let's start with the Red Sox.
Let's start with the Red Sox. Well, the Red Sox have brought us joy and they brought us pain. And
right now it's pain.
Right now it's pain.
Yeah.
And to let go of Mookie Betts, their best player, it's very painful to watch him go. But you understand why they let him go because of the money situation. I mean, Mookie wants to become a free agent. Yes, he loved his time here in Boston, but he wants to test the market. And you can't blame a guy for wanting to test the market, see what these other teams give him. You know, they brought in Dave Dombrowski, the general manager before. He won a World Series, and all of a sudden, the very next year, they don't make the playoffs. And so it's been up and down. It's been so crazy following this Red Sox team. I love Red Sox ownership, though. I think they've done a fabulous job of things in the community. You know, they want to win. John Henry is about winning, but he's also about being fiscally responsible as well.
Cora.
Alex Cora. Obviously, there's a lot of controversy surrounding this guy, but I was a big Alex Cora fan. You know, he was very straightforward with you when you had to cover him. He was very personable. I love doing interviews with this guy. Here's a guy who obviously played the game, knows the game. I don't think he's banned for life. I think he's going to get a chance to come back and manage again, and we'll see what happens.
I heard the Red Sox might bring him back in 2021.
Well, you never know. You know, they did not want to let him go. They felt like they had to let him go with all the controversy surrounding him. But people in that front office love Alex Cora.
It's very sad because sign stealing in baseball, I remember reading a book called The Echoing Green.
Mm.
And it was the story of the 1951 pennant with the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants.
Mm-hmm.
They had sign stealing even back then. Maybe not with the technology.
That's just it. You can still steal signs without the technology.
Today.
Right.
And that's nothing. I mean, stealing signs is a part of the business.
Right.
There was a pitcher with the Yankees, Bob Turley, and everybody used to say he was the best sign stealer in the business.
Yeah, you can do it. They just can't do it with technology. And that's the thing that costs Alex Cora. But I don't think he's done with I'm hoping he's not, because he's a player's manager. He's got a heart of gold. He's done so much for so many people. And I think he's a good manager.
Yeah, I liked Cora too. We went down to spring training a year ago, and we were lucky enough to get seats right behind the dugout. And my wife was thrilled that she could sit there and watch Alex Cora right mm-hmm. up close. And we didn't get I've always wanted to meet him, and we never got that chance. But it was still quite a thrill to be able to sit that close and be, you know, right behind the Red Sox dugout. All right, Boston Bruins.
Boston Bruins. Bruce Cassidy. Let's start with the coach because, I want to go beyond above the coach. Let's go with Don Sweeney. Don Sweeney's a Harvard guy. Don Sweeney's a very smart guy. Him and Cam Neely work well together. I love the fact that that they don't get satisfied with how well the team is. He's always trying to improve the team. Bruce Cassidy is the guy that, like Bill Belichick, holds you accountable, okay? And will call you out. Bruce Cassidy's the type of guy that will call you out. If you're not doing your job, he's going to let not only you know you're not doing your job, he lets the media know that, hey, if Tuca has to step it up, if Marshawn has to step it up, these guys need to step it up and play. And I like a coach like that. I like a coach who's straightforward. And I think Bruce Cassidy's done a super job with the Boston Bruins. And the Bruins are getting a lot out of, you know, what they're able to accomplish.
I used to hear stories about how people were frustrated because the Jacobs brothers wouldn't spend money, wouldn't do this, and wouldn't do that.
Yep.
I gather that attitude has relaxed.
It has relaxed. And you know, think about what the Bruins did, you know, getting to Game 7, not winning it all. But, you know, they have won it all in our lifetime, which is great. I think they can win more. I think their expectations are super high to win more. And I just like the way they carry themselves, starting with their captains, Daniel Chara. Yeah, he's an older player, older veteran now, but I like what he brings to the table. And being able to scatter in the young guys with the veteran guys, I think this team can go a long way.
All right. I like the Bruins too, but I think one thing that they did, and I will never forgive them
What's
for
that?
This, the same day that the Patriots had the Super Bowl parade.
Yep.
They chose to fire Claude Julien on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's good public relations. I mean, maybe Julien deserved to be let go, even though he won a Stanley Cup here.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they should have had both things happen at the same time.
On the same day. Well, maybe they're trying to, you know, the timing of it all was obviously trying to downplay, you know, because they knew all the Patriots coverage was going to be on that parade. And all of a sudden you call it for a press conference of letting a guy go. Different teams have different reasons for doing things at certain times.
Celtics.
I think this team, Brad Stevens, has done a phenomenal job with the pieces that he has. And Danny Ainge, again, a guy who's always trying to improve the team. But Brad Stevens is such a smart coach. And the fact that they let Kyrie Irving leave, mm-hmm. it was time for him to go. And with what the Celtics have now and the players that they have now, they're a team again. And it's fun watching this team play and bond and gel together. That's why you just never know how far they can go. I think they're a smart basketball team. I think they got the toughness in Marcus Smart that he brings to the table. He doesn't back down from anybody. And, you know, the sky's the limit. Obviously, there's other talented teams that the Celtics have to go up against. So it's going to be interesting to see how far they can go. But they have the ability to go far.
My wife was very upset over the loss of Ray Allen and trying to build the team around Rajon Rondo.
I could understand that.
And she said, you know, I'll never forgive. His name just went out of my Ainge. Danny Ainge for doing that.
Yeah, you know, you broke up the big three.
Yep.
You know, and Ray Allen, obviously, pure shooter. This guy was very talented. And Rajon Rondo, is as good as he was, mm-hmm. It just didn't seem like it gelled. You know what I'm saying? It just didn't seem like, it seemed like he was his own player, you know, and moody at that. But he was talented, and he knew how to get you the ball at certain times. I remember there was a time where Ray Allen wanted his pass a certain way, because there were times where Ray would light it up, and there were times where Ray was off, and he and Rondo got together because, you know, he was trying to explain to Rajon, I need to pass a certain way so I can get my shot off quicker.
I can remember way back on radio when sportscasts were 15 minutes long.
Yeah, remember those days?
I remember those days very fondly and mm-hmm. very well. When I came to Boston, Ken Coleman, whom I eventually got to know, was on WHDH radio, and he had a 10-minute sports show every night. Every night, Monday through Friday. Same with Ned Martin when he took over after Coleman left. Are you frustrated by the lack of time you're allowed?
Well, I have a biased opinion.
That's all right.
Because I love sports and yep. I love covering it. But everything's fast-paced now. I mean, media's changed, and how they get their information has changed, and everything is sped up. So, yeah, you better bring, when you're on, you're on, and you better be able to bring it when you're on because you don't get a lot of time. And it's about, you know, filling that time as wisely as you can, as smart as you can, and as entertaining as you can.
Bob Lobel was very friendly with Carlton Fisk.
Yes.
And it was well publicized. Yes. Good old Pudge, yep. Is there anyone that you have a special kinship with?
Ooh. Great question. Over the years.
Thank you.
Over the years.
You want to hire me as an interviewer?
I might have to do that.
I'm available.
Over the years, it has changed. You know, back in the Red Sox days, it was Mo Vaughn, back in the early days.
Yep.
And then Mo left. Big Poppy has done so much for our family and so much for Boston. Tom Brady is in a class all by himself. And I we haven't gotten to the Patriots yet, but I love covering this guy.
Oh, we'll get there. Trust me.
I love covering this guy and the whole Patriots organization. What they've done and the run that they've had has been, you know, phenomenal.
Yep.
Phenomenal. So Brady, obviously, the guys that I'm close with and would have done so much for the Ron Burton Training Village, guys like Matthew Slater and the McCourty brothers.
Yep.
Devin McCourty and Jason McCourty. Those guys have gone so much out of their way to help us mm-hmm. as a family and to help the community. It's been very special for us.
I was very friendly with Don Cherry and also Buddy LaRue, former trainer for the Red Sox. I can remember when there was a controversy about Carlton Fisk's contract because they mailed it a day late.
Yep.
And I called Buddy because I was co-hosting Calling All Sports on weekends with Rick Weitzman.
Oh, wow.
Who worked for the Celtics at one time and was a school teacher in the Massachusetts area. And I called Buddy and I said, listen, can you come on the air? And he said, I've avoided all interviews. But he said, for you, I'll do it. So
that's pretty special.
So I was very friendly. Yeah, when he was a trainer, I got tickets for nothing. When he was an owner, then I had to pay for them.
Oh, wow.
But I liked Buddy very, very much. And it just got me to wondering who you could, you know, if there were ever a time who you could pick up the phone and say, look, I really need the inside scoop on this story.
Oh, there's several players that I could do that with, and I have done that with over the years, and it's helped me out. But Brady is the guy that, you know, if he leaves, I'm really going to miss him because, and everybody's going to miss him. You know, it's not just me, obviously.
Yep.
But He's taken to my I have a son that plays quarterback. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you knew this.
Yes, at UCLA?
Right, and there was one time where I walked in the locker room and Austin was able to throw with Tom when Austin was 12 years old. And Austin and Austin promised Tom that if I ever get good, Tom, I'm going to wear your number. And so just recently I walked into the Patriots locker room and Austin and Tom calls me over. He goes, hey, how's Austin doing? I said, well, he's struggling a little bit, Tom. He's going through what you went through at Michigan. He's got to hang in there. He's got to hang in there. And Tom goes, give me his number. I want to call him. So Tom took the time to call Austin and really encourage him. And it really meant a lot to Austin. And obviously it meant a lot to our family as well. And yeah, it's pretty special.
So Brady in football, who were the Red Sox?
Well, it was Mookie.
Yeah.
It was definitely Mookie. Now Mookie's gone. So Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yeah. I hated to see the, I mean, on one hand, I hated to see the three B's broken up.
Yep.
But on the other hand, I kind of felt that what Mookie was asking for was way out of line.
Well, somebody's going to pay him.
And oh, yeah,
the
I know
Dodgers right now
him.
Because they're going to pay him big bucks. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what he's going to get on the open market, but somebody's going to pay him.
I'll bet the Dodgers or the Yankees.
Yeah, you may be right about that.
Dodgers or Yankees. So, of all the years that you've covered sports,
yep.
Who's your favorite person in the whole world?
Ooh, my favorite that I got to cover, I've done a lot of different interviews over the years.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite that I got to spend time with was Muhammad Ali.
No kidding.
Yeah. I was able to spend 3 days with Ali.
Wow.
And the thing I discovered about Muhammad Ali is that he was a marketing genius.
Mm.
He was very humble, the most humble guy you ever want to meet, except when the camera was on. When the camera was on, he would light it up. And he was so clever, so witty, and he was probably my favorite that I got to cover.
God, I met him in the lobby at BZ one night.
You did?
He was at the station, and I don't know what he was doing there, but I walked in. And
you walked in, and there was
And there was, I made my business to shake hands with him. Shaking hands with him is like shaking hands with a giant.
Well, he was a very gracious man,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Took the time to talk to you.
Yep.
Took the time to laugh and joke with you. I had a chance to he'd fake box with me.
Shadow box.
It's shadow box, yeah. And it was so much fun. He was just so much fun to cover, but he loved people.
Is there anyone, and I don't want you to throw any names under the bus here, but is there anyone that you did not get along with? I mean, I didn't get along with Billy Martin. I tried to interview him one day, and I asked him after the Yankees had played three games with the Red Sox, I said, how would you assess the Boston Red Sox right now? And he said, I only worry about my own ball club. And he turned around and walked away. I never forgot that.
I don't think there was anyone over the years that I've never, that I haven't gotten along. I don't remember anything standing out to me that I haven't gotten along with the guy.
If you had a choice, if you could do anything you wanted to do in your sports career, what would it be? Like, I've always wanted to do play-by-play. When I was a kid, Mel Allen was my hero.
Really?
I used to sit in front of a tape recorder with an earpiece in my ear and rebroadcast the ball game.
Uh-huh.
And I'd listen to Mel Allen and try to imitate him. I got to know him. We had him here for a promotion one year in 1975. My program director and I had dinner with Mel Allen at the Ramada Inn right next door to BZ, and I just sat there enthralled. And all I kept thinking was, man, I've heard this voice out of a radio, and now it's out of a real body, and it's great.
That's awesome. I think that for me,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing what I love now. I love covering the game I grew up playing in football. I think that I have to think about that. I really do. I have to think about that. My family's foundation, I want to help out as many kids as I possibly can. And if I can do that and give back, that's the thing that my dad left us. Didn't talk about football that much. Didn't talk about his accomplishments. He talked about helping others. And that's the one thing that that I want to be able to do as I live my life, is help as many, reach out, reach back, and help people achieve their goals.
Has the internet hurt you?
Oh, the internet hurts and helps people over the years. It's done both. I mean, it's it can hurt you. You know, it's and it can help you. It's done both.
I wish I had had it when I was doing interviews on a regular basis at BZ. I would have loved to have had it, because all you had to do is Google a name and
boom,
bingo,
pops right up, right?
Yeah, you're an expert. And they didn't have that. So if I wanted to get something done, I had to get a whole book
right. Right, I had to go look it up, right?
Yeah, or call the publicist and say, okay, I'm not going to have time to read this book. Tell me what you would ask.
Exactly.
If you were doing the interview. And yeah, in a lot of ways, it's great as far as that's concerned. I mean, YouTube is fabulous. I spent time watching. I love the show, What's My Line?
Remember What's My Line?
And I've been having a ball watching those shows. The one regret I always had.
Was what?
Was what I never interviewed John Daly, who was the moderator of that show. Because he was perfect for it.
Yes.
And he was just excellent. And I wish that I had taken the time to interview him. And for whatever reason, I didn't. He died in 1991. But watching some of this stuff now, I always will regret the fact that I never did that. But that's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes, right, exactly.
So I can't thank you enough for coming in here. As far as being able to sit down and do an interview, man, you're the best.
I appreciate that, and thank you so much for...
I really enjoyed it. I hope I didn't put you on the spot.
Not at all.
By asking you some of those questions.
Not at all. But we never got to the Patriots. I know.
Oh, that's right.
All
right.
How much time do I have?
You got all the time you want.
Well, I do want to talk about the Patriots, because...
You go right ahead.
Because what Robert Kraft has done has been absolutely phenomenal. And keeping this team here in New England in turning the entire franchise around, to have the run that they've had, and to hire Bill Belichick. And Belichick is the type of guy that just holds you accountable. He doesn't care who you are. He doesn't care. All he cares about is do your job. And they do it year in and year out. Now, obviously, they came off a year. We're not used to not having them in the Super Bowl. And so they're coming off an off year. And even their off year is strange when they don't make the Super Bowl. But
yeah.
But what a run. What a run. And it starts with Robert Kraft, and it's gone down through Bill Belichick, and the players in that locker room, they get it. They get it.
Is Belichick a hard guy to get close to?
He's yes and no. There are sides to Belichick. Belichick is very smart, very, with the media, he's going to keep his distance. He's going to just say what he has to say. But he's also, he does things behind the scenes for you that you would never even think he would do. Mm. And he's gone out of his way to help people, and he doesn't want the attention for it. But he's been very, very good to me. And, you know, it's funny because I have to interview him at halftime. And the halftime interviews with Bill Belichick can be very, very tough.
Yeah.
But he's been very, very good to me, and very, very good to our family. And I like the way he conducts his business. And a lot of people say, you know, why do you interview that guy? Why do you interview that guy?
Because you have to.
Well, not only do I have to, I respect where he comes from, because he runs a tight ship, and the ship that he runs, it works. It works.
Oh, you can't argue with success.
No, you cannot.
But on the other hand, I feel bad for a guy like Robert Kraft, because of all the stuff that he's done as far as good for the community and good for the Patriots and everything like that. You still have a charge involving him in Florida, which ain't going to go away, I don't think.
Well, here's the thing. You know, and nobody's perfect, you know, and not to make excuses,
yeah.
Nobody is perfect. But the one thing about Kraft is that he's done so much for so many people over the years. and it's helped out, you know, people that you never even hear about. And so, you know, I respect the man. I think he's gone out of his way to make the Patriots what they are, and with his family, the Meyercraft Foundation, everything. I think I just think he's a super person and a super family.
Brady gonna stay?
That's the
$100 million question,
isn't it? And here's the question that, you know, when I ask him, he goes, "I don't know yet." That's what he said, and I believe him. I don't think he knows yet.
But I saw something the other day on a commercial where he kept saying, "I'm not going anywhere."
Right, right. The Hulu commercial.
That's it. Yes,
Hulu.
Yeah, we used to have Hulu.
Yeah.
We used to have Hulu. We got cable back. It's a long
story. You can take that a couple of different ways. I'm not going anywhere. Does that mean I'm not going anywhere? I'm not leaving football altogether?
Yeah.
Did he mean that? Because he's not. He's going to play again.
Yep.
Or does that mean I'm not going anywhere and I'm not leaving New England?
Is he past his prime?
Well, he's 42 years old. If you're 42 years old, you're past your prime. But the thing with Brady is that Brady is always finding ways to try to get better. He's always trying to better his game and sharpen his mind. And that's why he's able to still play at a very, very high level.
I say that because I remember the 1973 World Series with the New York Mets and Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie Mays was in that World Series. And he was not the Willie Mays that you want to remember, because
right.
he would fall down in the outfield,
right.
you know, and misplay balls. And
right.
People will quote statistics of Brady from other years and say, you know, it's not the same this year, et cetera, et cetera. So, and you hate to see a ball player play too long.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that's going to happen with Uncle Tom.
We'll see. We'll see how Brady does and who he ends up with. Hopefully it's back here in New England. But the one thing about Tom is that he continues to work, you know, and he's going to try and better his game even at 42. When he turns 43, he'll try and better his game then. I just hope he does walk away at the right time.
All right. One more personal question. You have a family. You have a wife and, what, 3-4 kids?
I have so much fun. I love the kids I have. And what's amazing to me is that they're all challenging. They're all fun to raise. They're all competitive, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Are any in college now?
Yeah, I have two in college.
In Massachusetts?
No, nobody's around here. I have a daughter that plays basketball at Northwestern.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so she's a point guard out there. Mm-hmm. And so she went to my alma mater. And then Austin is out in UCLA.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, growing up, my dad said, make sure that you take the time. He goes, one of the things that he advised me, he goes, it's tough to coach. Mm. It's tough to be a coach because it takes so much away from your family. And you want to take time to be with your kids. And you want to make time to be with your family because there's nothing like family. And you want to love them as much as you possibly can. Hey, thanks for having me on.
I got one more question.
Go ahead.
Kobe Bryant.
Oh, boy.
You think there's too much of it?
No, I don't.
No.
I don't, but I'm not giving you an unbiased opinion because Kobe was a friend of mine. I knew Kobe. I knew his dad.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't. Kobe was so special, and it's so sad. I was talking to a couple of people. The sports events that stopped, that made America pause. Think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back over the years, the tie-in to sports, I should say, that made America pause. This made America pause. Yep. Kobe Bryant. Magic Johnson announcing that he had AIDS.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Very well, yes.
Made America pause.
Yep.
O.J. Simpson.
Oh.
We all remember
boy.
That, obviously, right?
Obviously,
made
yeah.
America pause. Somebody said yep. Dale Earnhardt.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, yeah, God bless Kobe and God bless his family.
Yeah. That was a real tough one.
Tragic. Yes.
Very, very tough when I heard that.
No question.
Couldn't believe
it. And we all remember where where we were. Yeah, when we heard it.
Yep. It's like the Kennedy assassination.
Exactly.
And the Challenger.
We'll Space Challenger.
Yep. We'll all remember where we were. And
Christa McAuliffe.
Yes, very well. Right? What we were doing. I was in Spalding Rehab when that happened.
Mm.
And I was in school when the Kennedy assassination occurred. Yeah. Do you think that game should have been canceled because of Bryant? I mean, the Lakers did it.
Yeah, obviously the Lakers did it. I don't know if all the games should have been canceled. No, I think that I think you just want to learn from it. You know, it's so tragic. And the one thing you want to take away from it, there are many things you want to take away from, but the one thing you want to take away from it is appreciate, right? Appreciate your family.
Absolutely.
The time that you have, because you just never know.
No.
When it's your time.
No, you don't. Well, I will tell you this. I have done interviews since the 70s, and this is one that will go in my scrapbook as one of the best.
Thank you very much.
I can't thank you enough for being here.
God bless you.
I watch you a lot on BZTV.
Thank you, Ken.
And I hope that you will be there. Oh, I know one other question. I keep wanting to wrap this. When you took over for Mr. LaBelle, and he's mentioned it, he got fired by CBS. Did you feel a little apprehensive?
Well, I was following. It's always, I never could replace Bob LaBelle. LaBelle was one of a kind. And I know I had to be myself. I did not want Bob LaBelle to leave.
You know, he didn't either.
Well, no, but a lot of people would say, hey, I bet you couldn't wait to get to that number one spot. Well, to tell you the truth, I loved working with LaBelle. Mm. So, you know, people ask, did you push him out the door? I did not. I loved working with Bob LaBelle. So was I apprehensive? A little bit at first. But Bob taught me so much. But I did not. I thought we were a better team. I loved working with the man.
Yeah, he is a good guy. I mean, I love them all. I love Joyce Colhaywood very much.
What a team. Liz Walker.
Yep.
Jack Williams.
Jack was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Love Jack.
And now we have Lisa and David, Evans, Liam.
They seem to find adequate replacements.
Eric, yeah.
I hope they don't have to look for one for you for a long, long time.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
God bless you, and thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.
Okay.
We did it.